Chapter 32, Osculant. Osculant, O-S-C-U-L-A-N-T. Pertaining to a close embrace or a long kiss, loosely adhering or joined, embracing, intermediate in characteristics between two similar or related taxonomic groups. From Latin, osculat, kissed, from the verb osculari, from osculum, little mouth or kiss. Their second night in Kiri settles in under a sudden downpour of warm rain, heavy enough to drench to the bone in seconds. Kurama stands by the wide window of the main room, watching the forest that surrounds the house tremble and shudder under the onslaught, even as leaves and branches reach upward for more. Moss collects water, then releases it in thick streams as it reaches saturation. And the air smells of green things and wet earth and gentle darkness. The children are all in bed, all exhausted from a day of training disguised as play. Yukito is good at making things seem fun, and Kurama's glad she was willing to help, or his patience might have run out a lot earlier than it did. Naruto has a predictably short attention span, and maybe it's one of the things he was purposefully forgetting, or maybe it's just that the first time he slept through most of Naruto's early childhood. But it's a pain. Still, Kurama thinks with a faint smirk, he can't wait to see some of the faces in Konoha when Naruto answers an attack, not with Minato's Rasengan, but with Kushina's chakra chains. It's a strange relief, being here in Kiri, and one Kurama hadn't expected. He's been running since the moment he landed in this time, flat out and as fast as he can, always with a goal just out of reach. And the overarching goals are still looming, waiting. But for the first time in almost a month, Kurama has nowhere to go and nowhere he should be. He's in between things, anticipating word from Konoha, Jiraiya's decision about Akatsuki. He could leave, head towards Moon Country and the Akatsuki base, but Jiraiya wants more information, wants to help, which Kurama likely should have expected, but didn't. As it stands, training the kids, or more aptly, training Naruto and Gaara, since Fu and Yukito only need practice and are otherwise appropriately terrifying, is the only thing Kurama needs to do. And the knowledge is at once freeing and strange. For the first time, he has a chance to think without the world crashing down on top of him. Space to consider, even if only vaguely. A future where he isn't a fugitive on the run from every single one of the Kage. And he thinks today might have been a decent marker of that. Not quiet, not peaceful, because Naruto and Fu are both hellions and Roshi doesn't help, and trying to teach small children incredibly destructive jutsus is just asking for collateral damage. But it was good. Happy. Kurama closes his eyes on the rainy world and pictures Naruto, his Naruto, warm and kind and worn around the edges, but all the brighter for it. Smiling, because when wasn't he? And with his hand on Kurama's shoulder and an arm around his back, pulling him back to his feet. For Kurama, here and now, it's easy to smile in the face of that. Maybe there's a flicker of grief to go along with the image. But even more, there's contentment, joy. It's amazing the difference a decent goodbye and a few weeks to come to terms with things can make. He's always going to miss Naruto, the man who was his first friend. But Naruto made him stronger, made him kinder, made him better. And Kurama can accept that, embrace it, and move forward using what Naruto gave him. "Now there's a pretty picture," Zabuza says from behind him. And Kurama opens his eyes and turns, raising a brow at the smirking man. Zabuza shakes his head a little, stepping up beside him, and his eyes linger on Kurama's face. "Or should I say, you're a pretty picture." Naruto always got annoyed and embarrassed in equal measure when Sasuke called him pretty, because he thought it was a word for a girl, no matter how many times Sakura tried to beat the notion out of him. Kurama just snorts. He's only male because he chooses to be, because that's what fits when he looks at himself. And in the face of that, words like pretty aren't enough to raise a stink over. "How's Haku's back?" he asks, not able to hide a grin. Thankfully, Zabuza isn't able to either, or just doesn't want to. "Well, he's not going to volunteer as a target again anytime soon, but for being dogpiled by almost 100 clones, he's fine. I think your blonde brat is fixing to become his slave for a week in compensation, though." That sounds very much like something Naruto would do. Kurama chuckles, brushing his hair back from his face, and watches Zabuza's eyes follow the motion. "Interesting." He lets his hand linger, smoothing the red strands into place, and then slides it down, letting the wide sleeve of his shirt drop back to cover his skin. It's curious how fascinating it is to invoke a reaction just with movement, just with presence, and to be able to make Zabuza's eyes darken, his pupils dilating, when Kurama turns his head and smirks at him. Kurama has seen it all, witnessed it with Mito and Kushina and Naruto, with those around them. But firsthand is different. This is his heart kicking up a notch, his breathing becoming a little deeper. This is a faint flush of heat beneath his skin, a prickling awareness and the undeniable knowledge of something shared when his eyes meet Zabuza's. Zabuza lets out a low sound, almost like a hiss, and steps forward. One roughly calloused hand cups Kurama's cheek, thumb dragging across his cheekbone. And Kurama inhales sharply as the heat, the awareness, redoubles. Zabuza smells like the rain on dry earth, edged with metal and the scent of old blood from Kubikiri Bocho. Maybe a human would dislike it, but to Kurama, it smells like power and fury and the prelude to a storm, and he can't help but lean closer, breathing it in with a low, rumbling growl. "Fuck," Zabuza says with utmost sincerity. "You're definitely gonna kill me, firecracker." The nickname isn't quite enough to kill what's between them, but Kurama still pulls back slightly, leveling a glare at Zabuza's grin. "What?" "Well, you didn't like red," Zabuza defends himself, though his grin doesn't abate in the slightest. "And firecracker is supposed to be better? Fireworks always were my favorite part of winter." Zabuza laughs at the look on Kurama's face and leans in again, his free hand coming up with carefully telegraphed intent to settle on Kurama's waist. And Kurama lets him, takes a step forward, leans in, because he's not simply following Zabuza's lead in this. He reaches up, touches short, soft black hair falling in messy spikes, and slides his hand around to cup the back of Zabuza's head. There's clear intent in Zabuza's eyes as he ducks his head, shifting closer until they're almost entirely aligned, chests brushing when they breathe. "Does that sake I passed out last night count as buying you a drink?" he asks, low and amused. There's an edge of sharpened teeth in his smile, and if Kurama weren't a predator himself, he might not appreciate it as much as he does. Does it look like I care? Kurama retorts, and it startles a laugh out of the other man, rough around the edges, but with a thread of warmth in it as well. You're something else, Kurama, Zabuza says, and for just a moment his eyes are serious, as his fingers curl tighter on Kurama's hip. Fuck, you let loose against Yagura and it was the sexiest thing I've ever seen. All that power, and a pretty deadly redhead right in the middle of it, ready to kill? To the rest of the world, Zabuza's taste is probably slightly questionable. Kurama just snorts. You really want that spar, don't you, shark face? Zabuza grins unrepentantly. Fuck yes. Can't promise it wouldn't end with us fucking on the training ground, though. He pauses for a second, eyes studying Kurama's face again, and then leans down across the handful of inches that separate them. Kurama remembers this, mostly from repeated exposure, even if he wasn't actually the one doing it, and doesn't fumble as Zabuza presses their mouths together, soft and coaxing. It's easy to answer, to meet him evenly. Sharp teeth scrape his lip, followed by a soft tongue, and firm lips move over his, drawing Kurama forward. It's a building touch of heat, a trickle of want that grows bigger, brighter with every pass. Remembering to breathe is hard. Wanting to is even harder. And a few scattered breaths are all Kurama can manage as Zabuza's hand shifts from his hip to glide up the line of his spine. He arches into the touch like a cat, a sound of appreciation slipping out without thought, and Zabuza makes a noise of amusement. That's enough of that, Kurama decides, and steps forward, nudging the other man back. Zabuza goes, but stubbornly doesn't stop the kiss. Not that Kurama is complaining. He opens his mouth, letting it deepen, and in the moment Zabuza is distracted, gives him one hard push. Zabuza yelps, staggering back, and the backs of his knees hit the edge of the couch, making him fall. He sits down hard on the cushions, pulling Kurama down with him. And Kurama is laughing when he lands in the swordsman's lap. Didn't think you'd mind a change of location, he says, grinning, and Zabuza grins back. Not in the least, he promises, tracing his fingers up Kurama's bent legs from ankle to thigh, then curling his fingers over the muscle and squeezing lightly. Kurama likes kissing, he decides judiciously, and leans in to take another one, even though Zabuza seems distracted by his legs. Zabuza gives it readily, open-mouthed and messy, and uses his grip to pull Kurama a little higher on his thighs. It's easy to feel that he's half-hard, which is just as interesting as the little hungry noises Zabuza keeps making into his mouth. And Kurama wants. It's not a type he's used to, not something he's ever felt for himself before, but it's still avarice with a hot, grasping edge, curiosity underpinned by something that's very nearly, I can wreck you, without any of the bloody connotations Kurama is familiar with. Maybe it's not quite selfless, but it's meant to be shared, and he wants to. He wants to a lot. You up for a good time, Kurama? Zabuza asks, and it's low and rough, like velvet scraping the wrong way over Kurama's skin, making him shiver. I think I could be convinced, Kurama answers. And like this, he's the one who has to lean down, one hand on Zabuza's shoulder to brace himself, the other sliding down Zabuza's chest, tracing the contours of muscle he's only ever seen up close on Sasuke, which is not a thought he wants to be having right now. Better to focus on Zabuza under him, even if the man is, unfortunately, still wearing a shirt. Apparently this version, unlike the one Naruto faced on the bridge, does actually believe in them. Kurama wouldn't have thought to protest this fact until just now, but it's becoming apparent that it's very much an injustice. Zabuza breaks the kiss to murmur, "I've got a perfectly good bed about 20 feet away. You good to relocate?" Kurama doesn't see why he wouldn't be. He pulls back a little, raising a brow at Zabuza, and the swordsman clearly sees the implied question. He chuckles, squeezing Kurama's thigh again and letting his hand drift higher, skimming over the inseam of his pants. "You don't strike me as the one-night type, princess. Just making sure." "Fuck you," Kurama answers, because that's always a good response to go with. "I'm just curious. You're interesting."
"And so your answer is to get me in bed?"
But Zabuza just sounds amused. When Kurama growls, he laughs, leaning up to kiss him again. That, at least, is mollifying, and Kurama allows it.
"Hey, I feel the same. You're dangerous and sexy. Might as well take advantage. So long as you know this isn't going further. Wouldn't want to step on your feelings, princess."
"Fuck you, piranha breath." Kurama pulls back to bare his teeth at him. It's definitely not a smile, though Zabuza's eyes go dark and intent at the expression anyway.
"Not my thing,"
Zabuza counters, and both hands come up to grip Kurama's hips, pulling him in. He arches, rubbing them together, and Kurama can't fight the moan that bubbles up in his chest.
"Rather finish like this, dirty up all that soft skin as we get each other off."
Kurama fights to keep his eyes from closing against a renewed flood of want and lets himself fall forward, catching himself on Zabuza's shoulders and pressing his mouth to the pale skin of his throat in a line of greedy, open-mouthed kisses.
"You said something about a bed?" "I'll take that as a yes."
Zabuza sucks in a breath, then hooks one arm under Kurama's thighs, grunts,
"Hang on,"
and shoves to his feet, taking Kurama with him. Muscles used to swinging his massive sword bunch and shift, and Kurama wants to taste them. He'd rather not get dropped, though, so he hooks his arms over Zabuza's neck, curls a leg around his waist, and asks mockingly, "What, no caveman grunting as you drag me back to your bed? I'm disappointed."
"Not for long you won't be,"
Zabuza retorts, kicking the door to his bedroom closed behind him. Kurama, remembering a vast number of times when Naruto and Sasuke were interrupted mid-deed, manages to lean over and flick the lock before Zabuza crosses the room and dumps him gracelessly onto the mattress. "Smooth," he complains as he bounces. Zabuza huffs, even though his grin hasn't faded, and strips off his shirt.
"Quit whining and get your pants off."
It's so ridiculous that Kurama has to laugh, and when Zabuza drops down on top of him, he's laughing too, which somehow makes everything that follows that much better. "A pardon?" Shisui splutters, waving the Hokage scroll in disbelief. "He up and steals Jinchuriki from every major village, and they're giving him a pardon?" "In light of previously undiscovered information," Kakashi reads, taking the scroll back, and he can't say he's overly pleased about it either. For that matter, he kind of wants to break something. However, the message is signed by not just one Kage, but three, and there's not much room to argue with that. He skims the rest of the message, carefully filing away the notice to be on the lookout for Killer B, and skips down to their amended orders. "We're to head for Kiri to rendezvous with the Sannin Jiraiya and give Kurama his invitation to return to Konoha. The Hokage mentions a hostile terrorist group and a high level of danger."
"How unusual," Tenzo comments, as dry as dust.
"Danger?
On an Anbu mission? I never signed up for this. Shisui laughs. Then, of course, presses the back of his hand to his forehead and pretends to swoon.
Oh no! Danger! Tenzo, save me! I'm overcome!
Tenzo starts to catch him as he collapses dramatically, then pulls up short at the last moment and lets Shisui hit the floor like a sack of bricks as he turns to Kakashi and asks, faintly incredulous,
The Hokage does remember that we've been trying to capture Kurama, doesn't he? Are we really the best ones to deliver a message?
From where he's lying in a heap, Shisui opens his eyes and glares at the Mokuton user.
Fucking hate you, you little bastard!
With all the impressive maturity of his 17 years, Tenzo rolls his eyes so hard they're in danger of falling out of his head, and points out,
I'm only an inch shorter than you are.
Yes, but you're very small and petty on the inside,
Shisui retorts,
and everyone knows that it's what's inside that counts.
From where he's perched on the windowsill, Itachi shakes his head a little, looking long-suffering, and cuts in before the bickering can devolve any further.
A merchant ship from an island off the coast of Water Country docked yesterday. They should be able to give us passage.
When Kakashi raises a brow at him, he smiles faintly.
People here don't like them. They were complaining to Genma.
Ah, yes, village tamer Genma.
Kakashi still stubbornly refuses to wonder why the people of Whirlpool Country like Genma so much better than him.
He doesn't care.
Good. Tenzo, make arrangements. Itachi, notify Genma's squad. Shisui, see if you can restock supplies.
Why does he get to talk to the captain?
Shisui complains.
Because of course he does. I'm a people person.
Kakashi trades glances with Itachi, sharing a moment of perfect understanding in their aggravation. Itachi rubs the bridge of his nose, carefully picking through his words, and then says,
Shisui, you can be intimidating.
Tenzo coughs to hide a laugh.
I would have said you're an overbearingly friendly assassin with a tendency to make people run screaming, but apparently your cousin is nicer than I am.
Like, that's a surprise,
Shisui retorts, climbing to his feet.
Just wait, jerk. I'm gonna buy you nothing but oily food. Oil-packed fish, oil soup, oily water.
Tenzo turns faintly green.
You are not, or I'll dye all your flak jackets pink.
Pink is a very fetching color. I think it goes well with my eyes.
Then I'll tell your mother about the time in Tani, with the Shisui blanches and throws his hands up in surrender.
No, we are not telling anyone about that, you little snitch. You promised.
The arch of one very unimpressed brow clearly conveys Tenzo's opinion of that accusation.
We're shinobi. Underhanded tactics are more than just acceptable. They're encouraged. If you don't want me to have blackmail material, don't do things that I can blackmail you with.
Kakashi kind of wants to know what happened. But then again, he also really, really doesn't. Deciding it's time to step in, he pointedly clears his throat. And when three pairs of eyes snap to him automatically, he asks mildly,
Do I need to repeat myself? I could have sworn I gave you orders already.
Shisui vanishes in a whirl of wind, and Itachi promptly slides out the window, Tenzo following him in a blur of long brown hair and distinct chagrin. Kakashi wouldn't say he's relieved to see them go, but, well, he's a little relieved to see them go. They've been in close quarters for 2 weeks now, and while that has nothing on some Anbu missions, it's still trying. Not Itachi, because Itachi is a good, sweet, polite child, for all that he's also kind of scary and a little creepy. But Tenzo and Shisui, when combined, make Kakashi long for the institution of gags as corporal punishment.
He sighs and drags a hand through his hair, then glances back down at the Hokage's message. The section on Akatsuki stands out, and he reads it again, trying to gather as much as he can from Sarutobi's brief mention. A group in pursuit of the Jinchuriki, comprised of S-rank missing nin, can't be a good thing. It's almost enough to make Kakashi's head hurt, because Kurama just became a tentative ally. But now, instead of having to worry about him snatching Naruto, there's another enemy out there. And they're not just one grumpy shinobi with a strange reluctance to kill Konohan nin. In light of his pardon, though, that part is at least easier to understand. If Kurama wants to return to Konoha, as this would imply, he certainly wouldn't do anything to make it harder, and... This is the threat that worried Roshi, that manages to be deadly even to Jinchuriki. This is Kurama's drive, what kept him running after Kakashi's actions drove him out of Konoha. Maybe, if Kakashi hadn't overreacted, Kurama would have left Naruto, gone to warn the other Jinchuriki without taking them along with him. But Kakashi showed him that regular shinobi couldn't be trusted, that there was no allowance in them for anything beyond threat. So Kurama had taken Naruto, under the belief that he could protect him better, and all this can be laid at Kakashi's feet. His fault, like most things. He has to breathe through the guilt, the sudden roil in his stomach, and he hates that it makes such sense. Bringing Kurama and Naruto back to Konoha, maybe that can fix part of it, but it won't help him atone for the rest of his actions. Of course, if there's one thing Kakashi is practiced at, it's atonement. He'll just have to try. Captain, a quiet voice asks, and Kakashi looks up to find Itachi in the doorway, looking faintly wary. He musters up a smile, eye crinkling, and is glad his mask and Hitayate cover the tells that would reveal it as a lie. Yes? Itachi pads forward, steps utterly silent, and then hesitates. He looks towards the window, out over the quiet, night-dark streets, and says softly, "If I wanted to leave Anbu, would you support my dismissal?" Kakashi blinks in surprise and takes another look at the 11-year-old. He's nervous, wary. Kakashi can see it in the tenseness of his posture, in the tight line of his shoulders. And it's no wonder, given the subject. Itachi is the pride of his clan, its genius heir. He's the youngest Anbu captain and a prodigy in every way. Except that of all the shinobi in Konoha, Kakashi knows intimately how Itachi must be feeling. Pushed so hard from the time he was a small child, always expected to do better than everyone else by virtue of a genius that never extends quite far enough. There's too much for intelligence alone to cover in their positions, too many shades of emotion and motive and humanity for a talent at jutsus and an eye for tactics to account for. Genius shinobi, Kakashi has come to realize, is just about the furthest thing from perfect human as is logically possible. Of course, he says, meeting Itachi's wary gaze, and watches relief bloom in dark eyes. If you want, I'll recommend you to be removed from Anbu and evaluated in village after this mission. Itachi turns his face away, hiding his expression. My father will protest. Your father hasn't been an active shinobi since the end of the Third Shinobi War, Kakashi counters. And the villages are at peace right now. There's no need for so many high-ranking shinobi in combat positions. And given your service record already, you've earned an in-village posting. I don't think the Hokage will argue, or Shikaku, and they're the only ones whose votes matter. Itachi doesn't argue, even though it's clear he doesn't quite believe it will work out so easily.
Kakashi has his doubts as well, even if he won't voice them. But he also realizes that a recommendation to remove someone from the active duty roster coming from him will carry more weight with the Hokage than most. When Kakashi, of all people, says he sees danger of burnout, Sarutobi tends to listen. "Thank you," the boy says instead, and Kakashi hums, accepting the gratitude without forcing himself to touch on messy emotions by responding verbally. "You found Genma's squad?" he asks. Clearly just as grateful for the change of subject, Itachi nods. "They're leaving now to meet up with the closest tracking team in Wave. Then they'll head back towards Konoha. Genma said to wish you good luck." That's no surprise, given Genma's personality. But it still makes Kakashi smile a bit. He glances around their room, assesses the neatly packed bags, and decides to leave everything as it is. Depending on when the ship Takiri departs, they might be pulling out in a hurry. "I'll settle our bill with the innkeeper so we're ready to leave. Clear the room?" Apparently very familiar with Shisui's habit of leaving kunai in odd places, Itachi rolls his eyes a little and starts checking under futons and behind pillows. Kakashi snorts when he finds the first one, pinning the edge of a sheet to the floorboards, and starts trying to pry it up without further damaging the wood. He leaves the boy to it, picking up his wallet and heading out the door. At least the frantic edge to their journey is gone, he thinks, sidestepping a couple coming up the stairs. That will make everything easier, hopefully. The hard part is going to be keeping Kurama from gutting them on sight, or just taking his Jinchuriki and running again. Maybe they can arrange for a fruit basket? Or a card? Someone has to make a greeting card for this kind of situation, right? Something like, "I'm sorry for chasing you across 7 countries and trying to brainwash you. Let's be friends now that I don't think you're trying to take over the world with human weapons." Yeah, no. That's not going to work. Kakashi rubs at his visible eye with something close to despair, and tries not to think of all the myriad ways this little jaunt could end very, very badly.